Pass me the light.
JB handed over the second nuke lamp, and Ryan opened the hatch just enough to slip the light inside on the floor. Then, closing the door, he carefully put his good eye to a viewing slot and saw the back swing open wide for a moment onto a brick-lined passageway and then close once more.
Found a hidey hole. I'm going to do a fast wreck.
JB leveled his shotgun.
Got your back.
Pulling the door open again, Ryan stayed well clear, but no arrow was launched this time. Had to be a one-shot booby trap. Retrieving the lamp from the floor, the man hunched over to fit inside the infernal machine and braced himself as the door swung closed. There was a subdued click, and the back opened wide as it had before, and Ryan stepped through into a room filled with boxes and barrels and crates. It was an armory, with racks of long blasters lining the walls, and multiple shelves stuffed full of plastic jars of loose ammo, the rims sealed with wax to keep out the air. On a table directly before the secret entrance was the Lama pistol. Lying alongside was an empty crossbow, the trigger rigged with a copper wire feeding through iron guides thick with grease and leading to the Iron Maiden. Then the device clicked impotently, trying to release an arrow that wasn't there, and the back of the Maiden swung aside, admitting an Uzi machine gun held by JB.
You okay? Son of a bitch. It's the Baron's private armory.
Looks like.
Ryan picked up the Lama and tried to tuck it into a pocket, but the Civil War blaster was much too heavy, so he stuffed it into his belt instead.
I'll rig this open and get the rest in here.
JB slung the Uzi and grabbed some rope from a peg on the wall. Then he realized it was sticky with some sort of glue and covered with black dust. It was a fuse, and just about the worst one he had ever seen. The local armorer had no idea what the hell he was doing. Just a rank amateur, obviously. Ryan found extra arrows and placed them next to the crossbow, while JB tied back the interior door, then opened the outer half of the shell and beckoned the rest of the companions over. Soon they were spreading throughout the armory, looting the place of everything useful. The very best long blasters were grabbed by Christy, Mildred, and Jack, along with bandoliers of shiny brass ammo, while Ryan and JB smashed open the sealed jars and passed out handfuls of different ammo to each person. Dean kept his crossbow in case there was more silent chilling to be done, but he grabbed a plastic pre-dark quiver full of bolts with razor-sharp tips. After checking his Lama for any damage or tricks, Doc tossed aside the dead guard's crude blaster and returned the Civil War piece to its holster, then began his own wreck for ammo. However, while there was a lot of black powder for the homemade scatter guns and muzzle loaders of Rock Pointville, there were no primers anywhere to be found. Apparently, they used rimfire cartridges to set off their shotgun loads. A clever move, but useless for Doc since he needed percussion nipples for the Lama. After filling his ammo pouch with a good pound of black powder, cloth wads, and lead balls as a reserve, Doc then chose a massive Webley 44 revolver from the assortment of blasters on display. He had used this type of wheel gun before, and found it to be a satisfactory substitute for the Lama. The bullets were loaded with black powder, and the lead shiny smooth, showing it was also homemade. Pre-dark rounds were always steel-coated, or copper-lined, to prevent fouling the barrel. Draping a gun belt over his chest, Doc flinched as the leather pressed against his raw back, and he was forced to buckle the holster around his waist. Oddly, with a gun on each hip, he found the configuration quite comfortable. Dean tested the draw on the bow while scoping out his surroundings.
This must be a bolt hole, a place to stage a rally against invaders.
Bad spot, get trapped. One door.
Ryan cracked his knuckles.
No Baron would ever box himself in where he could be starved to death. There's another exit somewhere.
Probably hidden like the door.
Mildred laid aside a British-made Hollins & Hollins 475 Nitro Express rifle. The huge gun had to have been the toy of some Texas millionaire and was in excellent condition, with a whole jar of thick, blunt-nosed cartridges. But the Nitro Express simply had too much power for the physician. Without most of the tools she had trained with in the pre-dark days, the woman had only her bare hands to perform meatball surgery. Fighting to control the recoil of the 475 would strengthen her hands and lessen her delicate sense of touch.
Wanna swap?
Christy proffered a 30-30 Remington long blaster. The barrel had been modified to receive a slotted bayonet at the front. The edge of the blade was feathered from a recent sharpening.
You sure?
Mildred reluctantly accepted the lightweight hunting rifle. Christy easily worked the thick bolt on the heavy Hollins and Hollins and slid in a fat, half-inch thick round, closing the massive breech with a solid, satisfying clack.
Absolutely.
She hated to chill anything, but when blood was necessary, Christy did the job as ruthlessly as any cold heart. It was a simple matter of survival.
Dark night, we have enough stuff here to level this place.
JB packed a coil of homemade fuse into his munitions bag, along with an assortment of items, including three pre-dark Grens. They were only concussion models, designed to knock out people with a deafening boom, not the deadly anti-personnel that threw off bits of shrapnel. But anything would chill folks in the right hands.
The Baron has really been holding out on his troops if they're armed with homemades, and he has blasters like this in storage.
Ryan lifted the lid of a steamer wag to find it full of cedarwood chips and belted links of fat brass.
Check this, 25mm belted ammo. I think the Baron has a cannon somewhere.
Jack slid rounds into the side port of the Winchester.
Maybe keep?
Yeah, on the roof most likely. That's where I'd put it to get the best field of fire. Cover the whole ville from up there.
Dropping the linked ammo, the man moved to a wall rack and started to rummage for 7.62mm rounds for the Steyr. But so far he found nothing, and he was dangerously low. He might have to grab that other Winchester. Then Ryan saw the shockingly white stock of a U.S. Marine Corps M14 and hurried closer. He knew the M14 was a ceremonial rifle used in parades and military reviews for the pre-dark prez. However, it used the exact same caliber as the Steyr SSG-70 sniper rifle. Pulling down the rifle, Ryan opened the 20-round clip and found it full of greasy hardball brass. Back in business. Going over to the trunk full of belted ammo, JB pulled a knife and started to open the wide 25mm shells to carefully extract the tiny C4 charge inside the warhead. Some of the plastique was only a dried lump, but most of it was still soft to the touch, and still as volatile as the day it was made, 100 years ago. Soon he had a small mound of the material and started using his palms to press it into crude blocks. Pulling a shower curtain salvaged from the redoubt out of his backpack, Dean passed it over, and the armorer cut it into squares to wrap the C4 nice and tight.
We don't need to waste an implo grand now to get through the front gate. One of these blocks will blow that out of the wall like kicking a knothole.
Prep one as a scuttle.
Ryan slipped spare 9mm rounds into the loops of his gun belt.
We'll get rid of that plastic scorpion and Gaz's private stash in one move.
Make a hell of a distraction, too, if we time it right.
Sounds good. Help me with that barrel of black powder, will you?
While the two men got to work, Mildred continued sorting through some tools on a workbench, hoping to find a replacement for her lost scalpel, when she spied an ancient binder tucked into a shelf and blew off the dust to read the faded cover. The physician read aloud in amazement, flipping through the yellowed pages of the operations manual.
Rock Point Water Storage Relay Station 9. So that's why the villa's here. This used to be a pumping station for a major city. Water shortage my ass.
Which means that isn't an artesian well attached to the fiberglass scorpion. There must be a feeder pipe somewhere.
Not matter.
Jack checked the play of a Winchester lever-action rifle. There had been a lot of 38 long cartridges for the short-barreled long blaster, and it was in prime condition, without a sign of rust or corrosion. A lot of folks would fire weapons and then store them away without cleaning, only to return a month later to find the dampness in the air had combined with the residue of the powder to form a kind of acid that ruined a blaster. Mildred had told him the name of the chem, but it slipped his mind at the moment. Carbolic or something. But there was none of that on the Winchester, which shone with oil.
No, we can use that to our advantage. Let's find that feeder pipe.
Following a blurry map in the manual, Mildred led the group through the armory into a back room, the doorway damaged in spots where the door had been forcibly removed. Inside was a huge steel pipe rising from the ground and doubling back down again. There were some meters and a wheel valve on the pipe, along with a small diameter bleed rod that went into the brick wall and out of sight.
Straight up the ass and out of the mouth of the scorpion god. Gaza controls the water from here, turning it on for the faithful and off for the people he doesn't like.
Dean showed a surprising understanding of the situation.
Surprised he hasn't declared himself a god yet.
Probably will someday. Hell of a way to rule a vill. A brave man will charge blasters, but thirsty people will do anything to get a drink of water.
Checking a toolbox on the sandy floor, JB used a cloth to wipe the condensed moisture off a pressure meter.
Dark night. This valve is holding back over 14 tons of pressure. There's enough water here to flood that whole ville, wash it clean off the map.
Over here!
In the corner of the pump room was a pre-dark iron ladder, bolted to the brick wall, leading to a hatch set into the concrete ceiling. Dean eagerly reached for it.
Let's check outside!
But before Dean could make a move, Ryan pulled the boy back.
Hey, remember, these folks like traps.
Using his panga to probe the way, Ryan found razor blades attached to the center of the first couple of rungs. Anybody grabbing in a hurry would have sliced off fingers under their own weight. Checking carefully every foot of the way, he reached the ceiling and forced open the hatch. A warm wind blew into the armory, carrying the sound of the alarm bell still stridently ringing and raised voices shouting in the distance. Crawling onto the roof, Ryan stayed low until he was sure there were no guards present, then worked his way to the edge and slowly stood to see the whole ville. Rock Point was in turmoil, torches moving along the top of the wall and cries rising from everywhere below the rippling canopy across the ville. From the top of the temple, the light of the wag could be seen in the distance, distorted shadows on the adobe wall showing the barn was occupied. But whether it was Sparrow looting the wag or Ville's Sekhmen setting a trap was unknown. JB pulled out his navy scope and peered through.
Everybody but the gaudy sluts are out looking for us, and I wouldn't be surprised if they are too.
Something sure put a round up the Baron's ass, and Gaza doesn't even know about the temple yet.
Might be because we have blasters.
Or type of blasters.
Jack gestured at the Uzi machine gun.
Some Ville's never seen rapid fire, only legend.
Christy crouched low in the roof shadows.
That must be it, our blasters. They think we're spies for traitor.
Cradling the Steyr in both hands, Ryan scowled at the notion.
Fire blast. That makes sense. Okay, get back in fast before we're seen.
Quickly and silently, the companion scrabbled down the ancient ladder back into the pump room. But as Christy started to leave, she felt compelled to look toward the keep rising above the ville, as if something were forcing her attention there. Then the urge was gone, carried away by the chill desert wind. The last to leave the rooftop, Ryan left the locking bolt open to speed their escape. A plan was already forming in his mind, something he had never done before. But it seemed like their only chance to leave this pest hole without fighting Gaza and Hawk.
Okay, new plan. Jack, help JB to rig the feeder pipe to blow when somebody enters this room. Christy, Dean, buy us some time by using the shackles from Doc's table to chain the locking bar on the front door in place. Make it triple hard for them to get inside. Mildred, give them cover.
And I, sir?
Doc hadn't joined them in the brief sojourn onto the rooftop and was using his ebony stick as a cane when he thought nobody was watching. Ryan didn't blame the man. A whipping took a lot out of a person, left him feeling bruised deep inside, as if he had rad sickness. It was a testament to the old man that he was up and moving.
Sit and rest, Doc. We're going to be moving fast soon, and you'll only get us chilled moving slow.
Ryan then saw a determined look of indignation grow on the scholar's face.
Better yet, go make firebrands. All you can, fast as you can. We leave here in 5 minutes.
At once, my dear Ryan. I shall serve where Icarus failed.
Shut up, you old coot, and get cracking.
What about you, Dad?
Dean paused in the open doorway of the pump room, 1 foot in the armory.
Going back up on the roof to do some sniping at the guards on the front gate?
Not yet.
The one-eyed man went to the master valve assembly on the feeder pipe and cracked the knuckles on both hands.
I'm going to set the scorpion god free.
Going to a wall niche, Ryan removed an oil lantern, blew out the wick, and very carefully poured a few drops of the mineral oil onto the base of the valve. Setting the lantern aside, he took the wheel in both hands, braced himself, and started applying pressure. The wheel turned only a little bit, then seemed to get stuck. Ryan knew that he had to do this gently. Too much force, too soon, and the spindle could snap. Dean started forward to help, but JB held the boy back. There was no room for another set of hands on the wheel. It was a one-person job. Ryan's hands turned white, sweat appearing on his brow as he continued to exert himself more and more. One of his feet slipped and he almost lost his grip, but dug in even harder. There was a terrible crack. For an instant, Ryan knew for certain that he had broken the spindle. Then, with a squeal of metal, the wheel came free and began to spin easily. The meter swung high at the rush of water throbbing through the slim bleeder pipe, the length going into the wall shaking from the water coursing through it. Softly, from the room beyond, came a splashing sound as a torrent of water flooded the stone basin to overflow in only moments and then started to spread across the temple floor. Mildred gingerly touched the bleeder pipe in the pump room. It was already coated with condensation from the sheer volume of water going through.
It'll take a while, but soon the temple will flood and the excess will start seeping out the front door. The Vill people will go insane.
Good. The more confusion, the better. Maybe it'll start a revolt.
Lots of folks would die if that happened.
Lots of folks are dying now.
Ryan massaged his wrists.
You better get moving before the water gets too deep in there to work.
Everyone but Ryan left the room, while JB knelt alongside the main pipe and pulled a block of C4 from his munitions bag. Gently, he molded it under the arc of the pipe, where it would be difficult for anybody to find. Then he disassembled one of the concussion grenades and inserted the detonator and ring assembly into the soft clay-like material of the plastique. JB had a few timing pencils in his bag, but those had a maximum limit of 5 minutes, which was much too short for the companions to get away from the temple.
Along with the booby, rig a secondary charge. I know how we can set this off from a distance.
The armorer packed the C4 firmly around the core of the grenade.
Got a radio detonator in your pocket?
Better.
Ryan went back into the armory to return with a coil of the dirty rope. JB attached a length of copper wire to the pull ring of the Gren.
The water will be reaching here soon. We can't trust that shit to burn when it's wet.
Ryan looked at the ceiling.
That won't be a problem.